I'll start by giving a little bit of a history of my practice and how I got into it. Started back around 1970 or so in New York City, and I went to the apartment downstairs of my neighbor, and there was a friend of his was there who was going to an Aikido demonstration. I had never heard of Aikido, and I thought, well, yeah, I'll go along, I'll see what it's like. And it was the master in Japan, the number one practitioner, and it was very, very exciting, and I really liked it, and so I decided that I would practice, and I went to Aikido classes every day. I was teaching at the time, and I would be exhausted and want to just go to sleep when I got home from work. And I'd take a little nap and then go to Aikido class, and it would wake me up. So I feel like my practice started then because I found something that woke me up, so to speak, even though I wasn't seeking that at the time. But it felt really, really good. And one of my Aikido teachers also taught Tai Chi. And he was studying with Cheng Man Ching. Some of you may, if you're familiar with Tai Chi, may have heard of him. And he was one of the six top students of the professor. And he said to me one day, I think you would really like Tai Chi. So I said, okay, and I went to the class, and he was a teacher for me there. He taught me the form. And I don't know if I said that was in New York City. And then I decided to move to Philadelphia, and I continued my practice of Tai Chi and Aikido. And after practicing with Maggie, who was another one of the professor's top students, who I really adored, and that became my real practice then. I took lots of classes with her, and I wanted to be like Maggie. There was something very special about her, very gentle and slow, and she was like no other person I had ever met. And one day at the end of class, she decided to have people sit, and she just called it sitting. And I didn't want to do that. So I would go into the next room with my friends, and we'd just talk. And then once I thought, well, I think I'll just try it. And so I sat, and apparently it's a little bit vague to me now, but I must have liked it because I started to sit at home. And I remember one evening I was sitting in front of a window, and it was night, it was dark, and I must have been looking out the window because I saw a shooting star, and the star went right here. And somehow I just really connected in a very physical way with sitting. And then I guess eventually, soon after that, I must have found out what it was, because I remember reading the Three Pillars of Zen and decided I was going to get enlightened and, you know, have one of those fantastic experiences. I was in Philadelphia for almost 2 years, about a year and a half or so, and before moving out to Santa Cruz. And so when I came out here, I had not a great intention of practicing because I didn't really know what that was, but I wanted to find a place to sit. And so I asked around, and somebody told me to come here. And Kirk Nelson, who I think was the first monk that Dan Coben was the, Chino Roshi was the first teacher here. This was around 1970, the end of 74. And he was sitting outside, and so he told me, he took me into the Zendo and told me how to sit. And then in those days, the lecture was on, we called it lecture, it was on Tuesday nights. And I remember the first time I came, and I was sitting kind of in the back, and there were no tons, so everyone was on the floor, and the place was pretty packed. And
was it in this building?
Oh, yes. Yes. Yeah, it was. The room was just about the same size, maybe a little bit. I can't remember whether it was smaller or not, but yeah.
It was a wall.
Right, because there was a gaitan. Right, yeah. And this little man was sitting up here, this little Japanese man. And when he started speaking, he was speaking very quietly. And in those days, we didn't have microphones. So there was no way his voice could be amplified. And it was very hard to understand some of the words he was saying because of his accent. And he would pause a lot. But as one of the Beatles used to sing, there was something in the way he moved. there was something about him that was very compelling and made me want to come back for more. And not too long after that, I think within 3 months, I moved into the house. In those days, the house next door where Kokio is living, Kokio and Shoho, there were residents living there. I think about 5 residents. And the Doksan room was also a place where someone could live. And there were, I think, at least there were 2 children living there when I moved in also. And in the evening there were 3 sittings, and in the morning there were 2 sittings. And pretty much any time you came during the day, there were people hanging out. In the 70s, people didn't have to work very much. So you know, I think I was working about 15 hours a week. And a lot of the people were gardeners, and they could make their own schedules. And there was a rocking chair out front and on the porch. And it was a very... it was like a family. We ate breakfast and dinner together. And there were, after a while, kind of satellite houses developed in the neighborhood. There was the Rigg Street house, and then there was Charles Oliver's place above the mystery spot where a lot of Zen people lived. And there he had a cave. There used to be a distillery there. And so there were all these wine bottles, empty wine bottles. But at any rate, that was a very nice place to sit because in the winter it was warm and in the summer it was cool. So it was a perfect place. I lived up there for a while also. And there may have been other houses, but offhand I can't think of it. So I practiced here for about 5 years. And during that time, I would go to, there were usually 4 regular sesshins during the year. And then there would be a couple more, either up at Spring Mountain or the Santa Cruz Zen Center would put a sesshin on. The 4 regular sesshins were in Los Altos, and the Sangha there put those sesshins on. So the Santa Cruz Zen Center was known for the quiet sesshins. We weren't talkers. The people in Los Altos were kind of talkers. But still, I have very fond memories of many of the sesshins that I sat. And then I moved up to Jikoji for 3 months, around 1980. That's all I could take. It was very crazy practice up there. The practice was started by Kobin, and I remember he had ordained a monk named Elliot, and said to him, I'm going to send you to hell. And he sent him up to Jikoji. And the reason that it was difficult practicing up there was that there was a community of hippies living up there who were doing a lot of drugs. And Coben felt that, you know, we could all get along. There's also a school there. So the school, the Zen community, and the people doing Zazen. And the hippies. And and after about 3 months, it was a little bit too difficult for me to practice there. It wasn't what I had expected. And so I went to, I moved back into town, and soon after that, left for Los Angeles to do a session with my Izumi Roshi, who I had sat with before in Los Gatos. And I was kind of on my way to New Mexico. I packed up my car. And you never know what's going to happen. I did the sesshin, and in the middle of it, one of the teachers said, you should stay here. And I did. I stayed for 2 years. And the practice there was very, very different. It was very more like the Zen Center in San Francisco. Big community, and a lot of people practicing there and living there. And I think for me, in addition to appreciating the teachers that I've had, living in community has really been a wonderful experience. Practicing together, and it's a way of kind of having support and also people to kind of brush up against, and for better or for worse, and sharing a lot of love and the practice. So, you know, some people talk about how they start Zen practice because of some great question that they had or some crisis in their life. But I was a pretty happy person, and I didn't have any crisis. I didn't have any great questions. I, you know, read lots of books about, you know, like existentialism, and I was always interested in life and really appreciated the great writers. And but for me, sitting was just an enjoyable experience. I really liked it, except maybe on the third day of or the second day of a sesshin. I don't know how many of you, I know many of you here have done sesshins, and for those of you who haven't, there's a kind of rhythm to it. No matter what the length is, the beginning is very nice. And then after a little while, your legs start to really hurt, and you start questioning why you're here and what this practice is. So in my daily zazen, I think I know exactly what I'm doing. But during sesshin, the doubt always comes up because of the pain that I experience. And then the third and fourth day, that's when, if you're going to get enlightened, it's supposed to happen, because you know you're peaking at that point. And then towards the end, you know, you're kind of anticipating the end, right? You're looking to the future, and so it becomes a little bit difficult again. And even with the short sesshin, I just did the sesshin of the Jikoji, the memorial sesshin for Coben. And it was only 2.5 days, and mistakenly I thought, oh, this is going to be easy, because well, it's short, number one, and I looked at the schedule. There were 2 long kinhins, half-hour outdoor kinhins, one in the morning and one in the afternoon, plus work periods, and some of the sittings were like a 35 minutes or a half hour. So I thought, oh, this will be pretty easy. Well, it wasn't. I think it was the first day was okay. The second day, the doubt started. I started, what am I doing this practice for? It's not for me. It's too painful. I can't relax. My mind is just so tense, and I don't think I can do this anymore. And then it was time for work period, and I felt utterly exhausted, and I had to lie down. I went to the community room, lie down, and for about 10 minutes, and then thought, well, okay, I'll try. And I got up, and walking out of the community room, I almost fell over. I was so tired. I think it was lack of sleep, because I usually don't sleep a full night during sesshins, too wound up, and lack of enough protein. And so I decided, you know, I'm not going to go to work period. And I told someone, I said, I'm not coming, I'm too tired. And I took a nap. And when I got up, I, instead of going to tea, which was after work, I fortunately, and this is a really good thing to bring to a sesshin, I brought a protein bar. And so I had my protein bar and felt much better. And then went to the talk, which I was really glad that I did that. I think it was the next day I was doing dishes with Vanya, who was the teacher up there for the sesshin. We were talking about getting older, and I brought up my experience of missing work period. I said, yeah, you know, when I was younger, I wouldn't have missed work period. I would have just plowed on through. But, you know, you learn, you get a little bit of wisdom with age, that if you're, you know, really having a hard time, and you know that resting would be much better, then go ahead and do it. And there's a book that was put out about Koban called Remembering Koban. And there are lots written by his students, many of his students, remembrances of the times that they shared with him. And several people talked about how Koban, when they were having a lot of difficulty and pain, encouraged them to, well, just stay out a period. And, you know, it's you don't need to push yourself. And, you know, it would be better to take a rest and then sit well. And a few months ago, some of you know, because I've talked about it before, I was having a lot of difficulty sitting. And I don't know what happened, but it was just really painful. Even sitting in a chair was difficult. And Kokio suggested that I take a workshop with Isho Fujita. Is that his name? And something was transmitted by him. It wasn't just what he told us or the exercises he showed us, but something was transmitted about relaxing. I think that was the main thing that I got from him, that Zazen is not something that should be a struggle. It should feel good. Your body should be at ease. And after that, I started to do a lot more Tai Chi. Usually I had been doing it once in the morning and once in the evening for 10 minutes each time. And so then I started doing it twice in the morning and twice in the evening and twice in the mid-morning and twice in the mid-afternoon. And it's made a really, really big difference in my sitting. I find that my breathing is better, and in Tai Chi, what you do, what you're told to do, is throw your whole body open. And I think that in sitting, we do the same thing, to let all the muscles relax. And a way of doing that is by extending the spine. And I think of the spine as there's a back spine and a front spine. So it's not just pulling up in the back, but also pulling up here. And it's, for me, sitting Zazen is easier than sitting in a chair or a car. I go someplace in a car for an hour and my body's messed up. But if I'm sitting properly, it feels, you know, quite good. Even though I've read many books about Zen, I think what Koban taught me, I think of him as my Zazen teacher, and the example of him sitting during sesshins and not giving much doksan transmitted sitting practice to me and to other students. And I feel like my teacher is Zazen, and sitting every day. I don't know what would happen if I didn't sit, because I'm sitting all the time now. Sort of like when you take medicine, you're not sure what would happen if you hadn't taken the medicine. Maybe you would have gotten better anyway. And I think different people have different ways of expressing themselves. And I think that for me, Zazen is how I express myself. And there are other ways in which I do that too. And I also feel that what I've been noticing is, and I remember Joko Beck, who was also one of my teachers, talking about how when we learn about ourselves, we learn about what makes us angry or makes us jealous or whatever the things that come up that are difficult in our lives. And we can't get rid of it all at once, but it's more like a spiral. And that as we practice, the spiral kind of moves up or down. I don't know where it moves to, but at any rate, it's like there's a loosening of attachments, anger, etc. And I noticed this the other day. I got kind of mad at someone. And usually when I get mad, my body would like really feel it, and it was like it wasn't there. It didn't bother me. It was sort of like just said what was annoying me, and then let it go. And I think that one of the things that Koban told someone was doing Zazen is like cleaning your house. It's kind of like, I don't know, purification or something. And I don't quite fully understand this, but I trust it that even though Zazen is a personal action, because we just have to do it ourselves, even if we are sitting with others, that we're doing it for others, that it's not for ourselves. And during this sesshin, after I had undergone all that pain and doubt, when we did Zazen again, I had more of a sense of sitting with everyone and knowing that I wasn't alone, because other people also talked about, why is it so difficult to do nothing? And guess life is, it's not easy. And Mayazumi Roshi, one of the things that he always emphasized was to appreciate ourselves. And I think that when you do zazen, that's what you're doing. You're appreciating yourself. Does anybody have any questions or anything to share? Patrick.
So, it sounds like your sitting practice, you approached a lot like Tai Chi or Aikido. It was an energy practice, or you have a focus on energy and what was happening in your body.
Mm-hmm.
Can you say more about that? The Tai Chi woke you up after work.
The Aikido.
The Aikido.
Mm-hmm.
What energy were you feeling in your body with sitting?
Mm.
It kept you coming back.
Mm. I can remember one time in Los Angeles where I was sitting and my mind was, you know, there's this tape going, and all of a sudden the tape just stopped, and then I just heard all the sounds that were happening in the street, and I think those are the moments that being in the present. So there's the energy. I think the energy helps you to sit, but then being present, which is why, you know, reason why we're sitting, to be here now. And so those moments when the tape would stop, I think it was what showed me that there's what zazen, what shikantaza was. Yeah. Does that answer your question? Kathy?
I think I remember that you spent some time in Japan.
Yes.
Were you practicing at that time? I'm just curious. If you were, I'd love to hear a little bit about what that experience was like to do that. And if you weren't, then you could just say whatever you want to say.
Right. Okay.
You gave us a nice little sense of your journey.
Oh, thank you.
And I was just curious
about
that time.
Thank you for asking. I didn't know how long to go on. I didn't want to, you know, it felt like I was writing a biography. Yeah, I went to Japan. I was asked by Mayazumi Roshi to go to Japan to teach English to preschool and elementary school children. And when I first got there, I, of course, I sat on my own. I had several different experiences of sitting there. One was at this very unusual temple where the teacher was, I think, trained in India, and they had these very strange practices. For example, before zazen, there's you take off your clothes. I mean, the men and women are separated, and you douse yourself with cold water, 7 pails of cold water, and then you get dressed again and you do zazen. And talking about energy, it really it did it. Except when I think it was around November or December, and I noticed there was a little ice on top of the water, and I said, I can't do this anymore. And then I also practiced at Senmon Soto, a training temple, and that was very nice. It was a very small one, and you know, it didn't. The community was quite different. You know, it was small, and there was one other woman there, and I enjoyed that very much. It was kind of low key. And then I also practiced in Kyoto with Shohaku, and I did his intense sesshins at Shohaku Okamura, and he was a student of Uchiyama Roshi, and the sesshins are 50-minute periods and no talks, no kyosaku, no, that's a stick where you get hit. No services, just sitting, and you get up really early and go to bed late. And I think it was okay. I remember it was cold. And then I also would go up to Koban's home temple. And Jim Goodyear, who owned both these houses and left them to the Zen Center, was living there at the time. And so that was another place where I sat. And then there was another priest in town in Nagano that my friend introduced me to, and I sat with him. So it was kind of a mixture of things. I think I sat at a Rinzai temple also briefly. It was nice experiences. Thank you. Thank you for asking. How has he? Well, he became my practice. I came back from Japan. I was pregnant with him. And I was a single parent. And I remember coming home from the hospital with him. Even though I was living with 2 other people and her daughter. When I went into the room that night, it was just me and David, and he started crying and he wouldn't stop. And I remember kind of looking around like, who's going to help me? And I realized, wow, you know, that was real practice. So I'm very grateful to my son. He was a good teacher for me, and still is. I'm still learning from him. Thank you.
What is it teaching you now?
Teaching me to just be myself and accept who I am, and go through each day with as much joy as I can. It's a good friend. Wake up with it every morning.
No other questions? Is it time to end?
I love you.